Welcome back to Human Emotion. Today we're going to talk about crying. So crying is something that really punctuates the human life course. From our start as helpless infants, through adulthood, tears seem to mark our most important life moments, weddings, births, deaths. This capacity to cry really appears to be this fundamental part of being a human. And it's really an important signal of some of our most salient life events. Yet, why do we cry? Why do we have these sort of glands that excrete water coming down our face? What function does it serve? And what happens in our bodies when we cry? So today we're going to try to grapple with some of these questions about an experience that's familiar to almost all of us, which is a time we remember crying. And as we can see here, crying not only occurs in infants, but it occurs throughout the lifespan. So, like I said, we cry from birth all the way to death. And it appears to be part and parcel of being human. And crying appears at least to be important in some way, although mysterious, for our emotional well-being. So, we see crying also widely spread in the media. So we can see examples here of President Obama, who cried, you know, it says here, cried while thanking the campaign workers in Chicago. We see crying also in the media with Hillary Clinton. We see it pervasive everywhere in our life, even in the political sphere. We also see songs that have been devoted exclusively to talk about crying. So one of my favorite bands, The Cure, has a song, Boys Don't Cry. And this not only speaks about crying, but it speaks about some of our beliefs about who ought to cry and in what context should they cry. There's other popular songs such as The Crying Game by Boy George. And this is all to highlight that crying is part of what makes us human. And in many ways, we wouldn't be who we are if we didn't cry throughout our lifespan, in public and private spheres, and even devoting songs exclusively to crying. So with all this emphasis on crying being such an integral part of our most, you know, salient life experiences, why do we cry? And what can we learn about human crying that's going to help us in our own life? So today, we're going to try to talk about crying. And again, what I want you to first think about, and I think what all captures our attention, is to think about a personal time in your own life that you can remember crying. So I want you to take a moment and pause this video and go through this exercise, your own personal crying reflection exercise. So again, when you're crying and you've identified a moment, I want you to write down what elicited the crying sort of episode. What was going on in your body when you cried? What were the features of the crying? Sort of what did it sound like? What did it look like? How long did it last? Did it have any possible social effects? And how did you feel after you had finished crying? So pause the video, take a moment to write this down, and once you're ready, you can hit play again and we'll proceed with the lecture today. So today, we're going to be talking about crying. You know, do we have tears to express our fears, or are there tears of joy? What do these tears in our life actually mean to us? What do they symbolize? And what can we learn about crying? So let's think about our roadmap here. We'll start with underlying theories that people believed have been true about crying. Then we'll get to some really subtle contextual factors that suggest that what makes crying adaptive or good for us is actually really dependent on the context, and an actually much more complex, rich mystery about crying than we could have ever imagined. We'll conclude then with our takeaway questions, an expert interview with a renowned authority on human crying. So let's first start with our own lay theories about why do we cry? What is the function and purpose of crying in the first place? I always like to start with some of these quotes that suggest that crying is good for us, that it seems to be strongly beneficial. So you can read here, early writings saying that it is a relief to weep. Grief is satisfied and carried off by tears. So this kind of early lay opinion suggests that crying must be strongly beneficial. In some way it helps us sort of wash away our grief and worries. And here, as we'll see, we'll go through several common beliefs about crying that have evolved since then. So in popular articles we see, in the news, in the media, in books, it all suggests to us that, well, crying must be healthy. So there was an analysis done of 140 years of popular articles about crying. And in these articles, 94% suggested that crying is beneficial, that it must be good for us. And in fact, that when you try to suppress or hold back your tears, that that is actually going to be deleterious, that it's actually going to hurt your body and your mind. So this suggests that we should cry as we feel it, and that by crying, we're actually doing something healthy for us, that it almost has this cathartic function for us. There's also been cross-cultural studies, as you can see here, that also suggest that crying is cathartic. So a survey was done spanning 30 countries. And these surveys found that when you just ask people to report, well, how did you feel after you finished crying? That people, by and large, report feeling better after crying. So again, we seem to have this belief and some research suggesting that crying is good for us. There's also these more psychodynamic theories. So these are sort of originated by Sigmund Freud, who suggested that blocking tears or holding them back actually causes psychological damage. So in psychotherapy, you would actually want to encourage your clients or patients who are feeling distressed, feeling depressed, feeling anxious, just to kind of let the tears out, right? To sort of cry openly in therapy sessions, because this was in some way going to cleanse them of their worries and fears. And then finally, there's these biochemical theories of crying that suggest, well, there's actually a sense in which tears rid our body, kind of expel out these harmful toxins in our bodies. So all of these common theories about crying suggest uniformly, well, of course crying must be good for us. And all we need to know is that when we feel like crying, we should just let the tears pour out, right? Or is there more to this story than crying is simply good for us? Here, I want to ask the question then, is crying really healthy? And here I want to sort of think of us as almost a Sherlock Holmes, where we want to go in as scientists, as students in a course on human emotion, and ask ourselves, where exactly is the evidence? Where's the scientific proof that crying is healthy? We want to go beyond just people's beliefs about crying, go beyond, you know, anecdotal evidence in popular articles, and set up a scientific study using the same research methods we talked about earlier in the course to really see where the data leads us. So I'm going to lead you on a beginning of this Sherlock Holmes investigation and actually suggest that maybe crying isn't always healthy. And in fact, maybe there's a nuanced story to when it is healthy and when it might actually not be healthy. So this is going to lead us into some rich and subtle contextual factors that are going to determine for us when, where, and for whom crying is actually healthy. So, example one, crying is healthy, but it depends on the context. So it depends first on how you actually measure crying. And what do I mean by this? So I'm going back to some of the methods that we spoke about earlier in the course. So here we find that when you do self-report surveys and you measure the benefits of crying retrospectively, so you ask people to self-report how they felt after they cried, that indeed, 60 to 70% of people report that crying is cathartic. They report feeling less tension, they report feeling more relief. However, if you do laboratory studies, so bring people into the lab, have them watch a film that makes them feel sad, that elicits tears, or recall a memory, their own personal autobiographical memory, and you measure their response immediately after crying, so 1 to 2 minutes later, that people actually report feeling worse. So they report feeling sad, and they report feeling more physiologically aroused. Or they actually show it in the physiological measurements when they're watching sad films. So it actually seems to show very different evidence if you use surveys which suggest it's beneficial, as opposed to lab studies which suggest it may not always feel so good to cry. Okay, Here's another example. Whether or not crying is good for us also depends on the social context. And by social context, what we're talking about is whether you are around other people or you're alone by yourself crying. We can probably both remember examples of each. And the example that you thought of at the beginning of the class, was it around others or was it by yourself? So we find that when we're actually around other people crying, that crying, what it does around other people is it's signaling to others that you want to seek some solace and you solicit comfort from other people. So when you're around people then, the benefits of crying may actually come from the social support of people coming up to you, embracing you, trying to help you, as opposed to maybe the actual act of crying in and of itself. Because when we're alone and we cry, there's no one there to provide comfort for us. And so when we're crying alone, we don't seem to reap these positive health benefits. Okay. Another example suggests that whether or not crying is beneficial depends on the person. So it depends on their personality as well as their gender. So what do we find in terms of these things? So in terms of personality, we find that people who score higher in a personality trait called neuroticism, so this is a trait that is often thought to involve greater emotional instability, so sort of more volatile ups and downs in their emotions, that these people actually report more frequent crying episodes, and that of those crying episodes, they don't seem to sort of reap the benefits from them. They actually report feeling more distressed and more aroused from crying. When we think of gender differences, we find that adult women cry more frequently and intensely than men. So it seems that both personality and gender characteristics have a profound influence on the nature and frequency of crying. There's still a lot of evidence that needs to, however, be discovered as to whether or not crying is more or less beneficial, for example, in men versus women. We don't know that answer yet, so there's a lot of unanswered mysteries at this point, too, about crying. A fourth example is that crying really depends on the emotional state of the person as to whether or not it's going to be good for them or bad for them, so to speak. So let me flesh out what I mean by this. So what we see here is that people, for example, who have a history of depression or who are feeling depressed, that when they cry, they actually experience less improvement in their mood after crying. So they don't seem to sort of reap the cathartic benefits. They don't necessarily feel better after crying, as opposed to people who don't have a history of depression, who may reap more of these benefits. If you also look at anxiety, research has found that anxious people as well are less likely to feel better after crying. So people who have a history of depression or anxiety appear not to reap the benefits that many of us associate with crying. So again, it really depends on the emotional makeup of the person as to whether or not crying is actually helping them or may even be hurting them. However, and what this point suggests here, is that clearly more studies are needed. Only until very recently, and a lot of the work done by John Rottenberg, who's part of the Experts in Emotion interview for this series, we had really seen just a complete lack or dearth of scientific data. And so we need to do many more rigorous studies on the nature of crying to really unlock its mysteries and either try to confirm more of this everyday intuition that crying is good for us, or disconfirm it by saying it actually isn't good for us, you know, always in every condition, at every time, and for every person. So for those of you interested in crying, here's a call to you to become a scientist and researcher of crying so we can better understand this everyday common experience that we've all had. So now I'm going to move to our takeaway questions for today. The first question from today really just asks you to remember what were some of these early theories or beliefs about crying, and a lot of them are focusing on the ways in which crying is thought to be beneficial. Second, how does the measurement of crying influence findings concerning whether or not crying is actually beneficial for us, whether we use subjective reports that are more retrospective or versus more laboratory-based assessments? And finally, how do factors such as gender, personality, social context, as well as sort of emotional disposition or makeup, influence the potential benefits of crying? And I'd like you also to go back to the exercise we had at the beginning of class and to think about what you learned today. How does it change the way you think about your own individual experience or episode of crying? Does it change the way you think about what the possible effects were or what was going on in your body or what the context was when you were crying that may have determined whether or not you found it healthy or maybe harmful? And with that, we'll now turn to our expert interview as part of our Experts in Emotion interview series. For our Experts in Emotion interview, we have the honor of speaking with Dr. Jonathan Rottenberg. A leading researcher in the area of emotion and psychopathology, Jonathan Rottenberg has pioneered efforts to integrate the basic science of emotion with the study of psychopathology. He received his PhD from Stanford University and is currently an associate professor of psychology at the University of South Florida, where he directs the Mood and Emotion Laboratory. He's the lead editor of Emotion and Psychopathology, Bridging Affective and Clinical Science, and he's authored over 30 scientific publications. His work, not surprisingly, focused on depression as well as crying, has received international media coverage, including Science News, Scientific American, The New York Times, ABC News, and the BBC. He also writes a blog about depression for Psychology Today. One fun fact about Jonathan Rottenberg is that he decided in his early 40s he was going to train for a marathon, and by the time we'll speak with him, he'll have already run 3 during that time. So I now turn to our Experts in Emotion interview with Dr. Jonathan Rottenberg, answering the question of, is crying actually good for us?